incredible. We've done 3 weeks, and now we're beginning our next 3 weeks, leading ourselves further into the summer, further away from courses, further away from, you know, the requirements of Limud Torah on campus, and further into Lishma, further into a Torah community that says that it's dedication to Limud Torah, to coming together as a community, even if we can't come together in person, but as a community on Zoom. Since the very beginning, since Purim, we've been on Zoom continuously, and really it's a credit to every single person, every single student who has been on this call. And as I say at the beginning of every shiur, you should feel incredibly good about the decisions you have made to decide, I'm going to cut out this time in my evenings when you could be doing mamash, literally anything, and to say, I'm coming to learn Torah as part of this community, Ashreinu and Ashreichem. Really an incredible turnout again. And we're looking forward to starting yet another week of incredible Limud Torah. And we'll start right now with what an incredible honor it is to start week number four, really this next push of the next half of this program with Rabbi Dr. President Ari Berman. Oh, one second, I have another person coming in now. Okay, wonderful. They heard that, you know, that there was a great showing. Rabbi Berman, I just want to say, Rabbi Berman, I want to say to you on behalf of the entire community, and I know I speak on behalf of the entire community, not only for thanking you for being here tonight, but thanking you for your tireless leadership of this community. I know, and I've said this in countless shiurim, that the decisions you and the entire administration has made during this crazy, difficult time have mamash saved lives in our communities across the country, across the world, because we reflect Jewish communities around the world. And you being here tonight with what I imagine is an incredible lineup of intense work and intense responsibilities for the entire community, your devotion to coming here tonight really says it all about you. That with all of the major decisions that need to be made to come to learn with our Barron campus student body, this evening on a Monday night at 8:30 really says it all about you. And we really, really, really appreciate you being here and making the time to learn with all of us. Everyone should know that the Makoros were sent out, and I will post them in the chat as well for each and every one of you. And without further ado, to new kavod, the Torah, I'm going to put President Berman on the spotlight view. Rabbi Berman, you don't have to do anything. And we are so excited to be learning Torah with you tonight.
Okay. Thank you so much, Jacob. Wait, I want to see everybody. I don't like the spotlight view. How do I see everybody? Oh, there. Okay, good. So thank you so much, Rabbi Bernstein. It is really just an absolute joy to be here with our Talmidot, with our incredible Talmidot. I cannot think of any place in the world I'd prefer to be than right here, right now. It's just an amazing, it's just my great, it's what brings me great happiness. And so excited that you're doing this, Rabbi Bernstein. I mean, talk about Lifnim Meshurat Adin, of the work that you're doing with our Talmidot, with our entire college, just the whole Ruach that is emanates from you, the Ruach Hashem that you've helped instill in everything that happens here. It's just amazing. It's absolutely amazing. And we see it even on Zoom and even virtually. It's Baruch Hashem. We're really blessed to have you. Thank you. And thank you, everyone, for being here. It's just so nice to see everybody. If you haven't had your faces on, please show your videos if you can. It's just wonderful to see everybody. Incredible. Is there a Yael Blau sighting somewhere that I saw? Was Yael here? Oh my gosh, Yael Blau.
I'm here.
This is unbelievable. Michelle's here. Wow. Okay, this is awesome. Okay, so wonderful to see everybody. Really, it's just wonderful to see everybody. So they told me that we're doing biblical personalities. So which biblical personalities have you already done? Who have you done so far? Which ones?
We did Avraham.
Avraham, okay, great. Avraham?
We did Ruth. We discussed the Ruth story. We did a little bit about Ruth and Naomi and how they relate to Tamar and Yehuda and about Esther.
So good. So Avraham, Ruth relating to, of course, back the story of Tamar and Chalitza and Yibam and all those species.
We did Eliyahu.
So would you, did you think that Esav would be the next one? Is Esav the one that you were thinking? That's when they told me they're doing biblical personalities, I'm like, who can I do that would be interesting? And I figured Esav wouldn't have been on the list so far. But Esav is a really interesting biblical personality. And there's a lot of things that we learn from Esav. And there's actually a theme in Esav that runs throughout Bereishis. That is very important to uncover. So if I had to ask you about Esav, let's start picking this out. What would you guys, what are some characteristics of Esav? What would you say? Can I call on people? Talia, what would you say about Esav? I don't know how many Talias there are, so there you go. I was talking. What would you say about Esav?
A hunter.
A hunter. Yafet. Esav's a hunter. What else do we know about Esav? What else do we know? Sarah.
Admoni.
Admoni, which means what, by the way? What would you say about him?
I mean, you can either go by the red hair or that he's angry, like anger.
Yafeh, anger or the red hair. Ayelet says respecting his father, very important. Very important. Rivka, what else? What would you say about Esau? Maybe. Yeah, anybody named Rivka, by the way.
Okay, I guess like...
I'm just saying Jewish names.
go with like opposite of Yaakov, like the other end of Yaakov.
The opposite of Yaakov. The question is how, but excellent. He's the opposite of Yaakov. What else do we know about Esau? What else do we know about Esau?
The Bechor, sort of. Meaning the original Bechor.
As part of the Bechor sort of stories of all of Bereishis, he's in that genre. Okay, I see we can mine the chats also. That's good. I see Miriam says Amali comes from him. Very interesting to think about that Amali comes from him. Okay.
Also, he's about like Olam Hazeh in the now as opposed to Olam Hava in the long term.
Great. Who said that?
Devorah Shry.
Where are you? Look at that. There's Ryder. Who are you with? Oh, my gosh. Right. So he's about the here and the now. He's about the here and the now in this world. And then I see a couple of other things. Rash, quick to act. He likes immediate gratification. Very into the physical. All these things are related. This is amazing. Okay. There's so much we know about Esav. So I want to put it in a context for you. He's a very important figure. He's a very important figure. And maybe I'll begin with one very obvious question, okay? Now, Esav was his father's favorite. Now, Yitzchak is not a foolish man, right? Yitzchak Avinu. Why was Esav Yitzchak's favorite? With everything you've said about Esav so far, except the respecting his father, which is very positive, what would it be about Yitzchak that he was Yitzchak's favorite? So let's look at the source sheets. You guys have the source sheets? Is it in the chat? Let's have it in the chat. They have little source sheets. Let's open up the source sheets. I'm going to open it up also here. Let's see there. Okay, I opened it before. It already exists. Open file. Okay, so if we look at the source sheets, and let's just go through a little bit about Esav's story. So if we look at source number, let's start with source number one. Let's say when they were born. And Pasuk Chafei. V'yetzei Arishon Admoni Kulo Kader Tse'ar V'yikur Shmo Esav. And the first one came out in Ammoni, all fully haired, and they called his name Esav. V'achreichein yatza achiv yado chesed ba'akev Esav, v'ikrashmo Yaakov. Yitzchak ben shishim shana v'ledot otam. Yitzchak was 60 years old when he had the children, to keep that in mind. And the first one was Esav, and the second was Yaakov. Now, just by their names, why was Esav called Esav? What about Esav, what does Esav mean even? Why was Aesop called Aesop? Okay, so it's not so obvious. So look at Rashi, Migrushmo Aesop in source number 2. Hakol Karulo King. Now, it's very interesting. It doesn't say, and he called his name Aesop. Like when it says, normally when they name people, right? Like in for Yaakov, it says, Vayikra Shemo Yaakov. He called his name Yaakov. When it comes to Aesop, it says, Vayikru Shemo Aesop. They all called his name Aesop. Why did they all call him Aesop? L'vishahaya na'aseh v'nigmar v'se'iro. K'ben shanim harbe. Because he was finished. He was completed. In this case, it sounds like it's almost like he reached puberty already. He was all covered with hair. K'ben shanim harbe, like he was much older. Like Aesop came out hairy and done. He was complete. Aesop is from na'aseh v'nigmar. He was done. He was done. He came out complete. Now, Yaakov, why was Yaakov called Yaakov? Why was Yaakov called Yaakov?
Because he was holding on to Esav's heel when he was...
Because he was holding on, he's holding on to Esav's heel. So already we have a sense Yaakov is known in relation to Esav. Esav is done. Okay, and Yaakov is known in relation to Esav. He's holding on to Esav's heel. Okay, let's keep on reading. V'yigdalu ha-na'arim, and the boys grew up. V'ayi Esav ishu de'etzayin ish sadeh. V'yakov ish tam yoshev aholim. Now, what does that mean? What does that mean? He was Yodea Sayin Ish Sadeh, and Yaakov was Ish Tam Yoshev Alim. What does that mean?
Esav was a hunter, and Yaakov sat in his tent and was a timid person.
Okay, so Esav was a hunter. Yodea Sayin, you knew how to hunt. What else does it say about Esav? This is very important, often overlooked. Not just that he was a hunter, but what?
A thief in his mouth, like he would bring the food to Yaakov, and not Yaakov, yeah.
Yes, we're going to get to that in a moment. But he wasn't just Yodei Esai, he was an Ish Sadeh. He was a man of the field. You have to remember that. He was an Ish Sadeh. Esau was a man of the field. Now, in contrast to that, Meira says, is Yaakov. And what is Yaakov? He's an Ish Tam. Yosheva, and what does it mean, Ishtam? So Meira translated, and he was a timid man. And what does Yosheva Holim mean? What does Yosheva Holim mean?
He would learn Torah.
He would learn Torah. Like he would dwell in tents. So Chazal say, what tents could you dwell in? He was Ole Torah. He dwelled in the tents of Torah. Okay, what else could it mean, Yoshev Aholim? And this is said in seemingly in contrast to Esav.
Esav was more outdoor and Yaakov was more indoor.
Nice. Esav was more outdoor, Yaakov was more indoor. Esav was Ish Sadeh, and Yaakov was Yoshev Aholim. That could very well be. I like that a lot. It's an indoor-outdoor theme. That's interesting. What else could Yosheva Olim be? Yeah, Yael.
A lot more controlled and organized. Sadeh is nature. It's a lot more wild as opposed to being indoors where everything is kind of more controlled.
More control. And really gets to what does the word tam mean? Ish tam. What does that mean? Meira, it's translated tam as timid. Which is actually a very nice translation of Tom. What else could Tom mean? Talia, yeah.
Could it be like Ohel is more like temporary? Like more able to break, you know?
Yeah, actually, that's a great definition of Ohel. Because Ohel, at least in the beginning of Bracious, refers to a specific profession. Anybody know a profession that all people who dwell in tents?
Shepherd.
Shepherd. Yeah. It's temporary because you have to keep on moving as a shepherd, right? Now that's a very interesting contrast. If Yaakov was a shepherd, which is true, and Esav was a hunter ishadeh, keep that in mind. That's a pretty big distinction. Yeah. Somebody had their hand up. Who had their hand up? Yes.
Couldn't Tamim or like Tam also mean perfect, like the way it's used to describe Eov?
Yeah. Yafeh. Actually, an Eov is like a tzaddik. Yeah. That's I don't know if I gave it in this in the Stern context, but one of the shirim I gave this year was the Arba Banim. What is the Chacham, Tam, Rasha, and Enet Shein Yodei Lishaol? Who is the Tam in contrast with? So people could think the Tam is the simple son versus, let's say, the Chacham. But actually, Tam could be, the Vilna Gaon says Tam is the Tzaddik, is the perfect one, quoting Eov, and is in contrast to the Rasha. And there you have, if Tam means that, it's a very nice contrast with Esav, perhaps. In that sense. Okay, so you have all these possibilities, although the profession, the focusing on the profession is something very interesting. It's a very interesting focus. So if you look, for example, why did Yitzchak love Esav more? So it says, what does it say about Esav? It says that Esav, what did Esav do? He was Sayyid Bepiv. So what does that mean, he was Sayyid Bepiv? What does Sayyid Bepiv mean? What does Sayyid Bepiv mean?
That he fed him?
The simple shot is that he fed him. What did Esau feed him?
What he hunted?
Again, what he hunted. So this is going to sound very basic, but trust me, it's going somewhere. So Esav would leave his house every day. Where would Esav go?
Hunt.
Where would he hunt?
Field.
Esav would hunt in the field. And he'd bring back the food that he got from the field, and he'd feed it to his father. And Yitzchak loved him for that. Now, why would Yitzchak love him? Because he hunted in the field and he brought the food back to his father. Now, I mean, don't get me wrong. The idea that a person's, or at least a man's heart is through his stomach is a biblical lesson, you know, that is important. But what is it? What is it, because he fed him? Like, that's why Yitzchak liked him more? Like, what's the connection? Like, I mean, the pasuk says Beferish, that it was Sayyid Bepiv. Why would that be the reason why Yitzchak loved Esav more? So you have to really understand Yitzchak. You know, if you look in the, for example, look when Yitzchak got the when he wanted to give the brachot. So look at source number 8. Yitzchak wanted to give the brachot, right? So what did he tell his son to do? He told Esav to go out in the field and go bring me back food. And then Yaakov came in dressed as Esav in Esav's clothes. And look what it says. Ve'yigash, Yaakov approached, ve'yishak lo, and he kissed him, ve'yarach et reach begadav v'vrecheo. And Yitzchak smelled Yaakov's clothes. Yaakov was dressed as Esav, so Esav's clothes, and he blessed him. Ve'yomer, he said, the smell of my son is like the smell of the field, which God has blessed. So what is it that Yitzchak loved? What infused him with the feeling that I want to give you a bracha? What was it? It was the reach sadeh. It was the smell of the field. So the key in this whole story is understanding Yitzchak. Because Yitzchak is totally misunderstood in Bereishis. Now, where's the first time, maybe the first time you see Yitzchak as an active person? Anybody know the first time you see Yitzchak do anything active? Anybody know?
When Yitzchak was Lasuach Basadeh?
Who said that? Who just said that? Yes. So Rivka comes back, falling off the Gamal, because she sees that Lifnot Erev, towards the evening, that he was Lasuach Basadeh. What does it mean he was Lasuach Basadeh? What does it mean that Yitzchak was Lasuach Basadeh? Anybody know?
Davening. Conversing.
Davening. Who said that? Who said davening?
Ayala.
Ayala? Okay, so davening. Yeah. Chazal understand the Suach says from Sicha, and it's davening. Right? Which is a very important piece, by the way. And it's a whole, there's a whole meditation on the connection between Mincha, okay? L'suach basadeh l'fnod, mincha is davening. Okay, we'll get, and something else. L'suach, actually, pshat of l'suach means something else. What else does l'suach mean? The pshat in the Torah is l'suach is something else. Chazal, the drasha, is that it's davening. What's the pshat of l'suach?
Conversing?
So again, from sicha. But actually, there's another word in the in Bereshit of siach. Anyone know what siach is in Bereshit? It's a bush. If you look at the Rashbam, we have it here somewhere. Look at the Rashbam in source 6. It says v'chol siach hasadeh, kolomar latit ilanot. Yitzchak was planting. Lesuach means to plant. That's the Pashtanim understand Lesuach is to plant. Yitzchak was planting. And that, by the way, the meditation is Dafka and Mincha is the time where people work and they have to break to go Daven Mincha. It's very important. Mincha is a very important element of the Torah Ba'avoda, and will be for another time. Yitzchak went to plant. Why did Yitzchak go to plant towards the evening? Why do you go to the field to plant? If I ask you, what were the professions of the Avot? What would you say? What was the profession of the Avot? What were they?
Shepherds.
They were shepherds. That's what everybody assumes, that the Avot were the shepherds. It's not true. Avram was a shepherd. Yaakov was a shepherd. You know what Yitzchak was? He was a farmer. Yitzchak did not live in tents. Yitzchak lived in a house. And he had a farm. And he loved the field, which was the farm. His whole life was the field. His whole life was the sadeh. In fact, we know that not only did he plant a little bit, but he planted mea sha'arim, the Torah says. Right? It says that Yitzchak planted mea sha'arim. Look at source 7. V'yizra'i Yitzchak ba'aretz ahi, v'yimtza b'shanahi mea sha'arim. The first time mea sha'arim is used is by somebody working. And he got 100-fold from his planting. Yitzchak was a farmer, and he loved the field. He did not dwell in tents. Shepherds dwelled in tents. All throughout Bereshit, there's this farmer-shepherd tension. Where else do you see the farmer-shepherd tension? Where else do you see it?
Cain and Hevel.
Cain and Hevel. Cain and Hevel. Hevel was a shepherd and Cain was a farmer. And it goes all through operation, we're going to see. Okay, so Yitzchak was a farmer. Do you know why he loved he loved Asa? Because Asa reminded him of himself. Asa also was an Ish Sadeh, like Yitzchak was. That's why he loved Asa, because Asa brought him back the taste of the field. And that's why when he wanted to give a bracha, he said, go to the field and bring food. And why he smelled it, that Reach Vini, Kareach HaSadeh, that's what infused him to give the bracha. He loved the field. Esav was reminding himself, and Esav knew that. Esav lived his life in imitation of his father. How old was Esav when he got married? How old was he?
40.
40. Why did Esav get married when he was 40?
Because that's how old his father was also when he got married.
That's how old Yitzchak was when Yitzchak got married. And when he found out that his father didn't like his two wives, what did he do? He married a third one that he thought would meet his father's approval. His whole life he was trying to, in fact, if you think about it even deeper, what was Yitzchak's whole life? Eli Yitzchak ben Avram, Avram holidas Yitzchak. Then Yitzchak went around Dafka to the same wells that Avram went to and redug them. Yitzchak too tried to imitate his father. Asa was imitating his father by imitating his father. Asa was the next Yitzchak. He was imitating his father. The Kibbutz Ava'im wasn't fake, it was real. And Yitzchak loved him because it was him. Yaakov was not Yitzchak. Yaakov was Ishtam Yosheva Alin. That wasn't Yitzchak. So, with all these positive things about Esav, like what went wrong? Esav sounds pretty good. So, what went wrong with Esav? So, there you get to all of the pieces that you've said, which is, I mean, the real highlight is, you know, selling the Bechorah. Like, that's really the highlight, right? When he comes back so tired and exhausted, and I mean, think about Yaakov, it's a whole other thing. So your brother comes back so tired and exhausted, he feels like he's going to die. He's a little melodramatic. Asa's very emotional, by the way. He's a very emotional person. He's dramatic, he's emotional. He could do a dramatic act, like he's emotional. So he comes back and he's really hungry. And his brother, and he says, you're making some soup. Can I have some soup? And his brother says, yeah, I'll give it to you if you sell me your birthright. Now, there's a whole other analysis of Yaakov. I mean, can you imagine your brother saying that to you? Like, you came back from a hunt, you think you're going to die. You know, maybe you're not, but you're melodramatic. And your brother says, I'll sell it to you. I mean, that requires a whole other level of analysis, maybe some other time. But then Esav says it. Why does Esav sell it? What does he say? In a very important line, Hine anochi holeich lamus, lamezeli b'chora. So what does that mean? What does that mean? Hine anochi holeich lamus, lamezeli b'chora.
Go ahead.
If I'm going to die anyways, then what's the point of having this Bechora?
So if I'm going to die anyway, what does it mean that I'm going to die anyway? What does he mean when he says that?
Because he felt like he was going to die.
So it could either mean he thinks the second he's going to die. And then, by the way, if he really was going to die, that's totally true. Like, if you're really going to die, I mean, again, that Yaakov asked him that is, you know, but if you're really going to die, it's not such a stupid idea. Okay, that's one way of understanding it. What else could it mean? You're on mute. What else could it mean? Oh, I thought you were talking. What else could it mean?
If he's not going to have Olam Haba.
If who's not going to have Olam Haba?
If Esav won't get Olam Haba, meaning he won't live on in the next world.
Interesting. But why would Esav say that if I'm not going to live on in the next world? Meaning he's saying because of his character?
Like if his bechora is what's connecting him to his relationship with Hashem and this idea of Olam Haba, if he's not going to have that anyways, if that's going to lead him to metaphoric death, then he might as well give it up to Yaakov.
Why would it lead him to the, why would having the bechora lead to the metaphoric death?
Because it connects him to the idea of Olam Haba and trying to work for that.
And he doesn't want to work for that.
It seems like not.
Uh-huh. I understand. Meaning he's saying, listen, this isn't a value to me because that's an Olam Haba kind of thing. I don't care about that.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. I don't care about that. Okay. Any other perushim? Inan ochi aleich lamos lama zeli b'chora? So, Raquel says the b'chora means inheriting Eretz Yisrael and Esau will be dead before the times. You won't be able to reap the benefits. So that is another perush, which is that he's saying, I'm going to die. Look, the b'chora is only going to happen after I die, right? It'll take 4 generations. So I don't care about that. Like thinking about my descendants, I don't care about them. I'm going to be dead. All I care about is me. Eat, drink, and be merry. I don't think about the future. And it's what you guys said before about Esav. He's rash. He's physical. It's the here and now. And that really is pretty damning. Meaning he's like Yitzchak. He's the man of the field. All that stuff. But, you know, in the end, he's rash. And you just can't, it's very for the moment. You know, I'll give you an example. You know, that worked against him. Why did Yaakov, when Yaakov was going back to Israel, so he found out that Esau was coming with 400 men. So Yaakov, what was Yaakov's reaction? Yaakov was afraid. Why was Yaakov afraid? Because why was Esau coming with 400 men? He was coming to kill him. Or he was afraid he was coming to kill him. So Yaakov plans, he gives all these gifts, and Esav comes, and Yaakov bows down 7 times. Esav comes over. Now, till the moment Esav is there, you do not know if Esav is going to take out his sword and kill Yaakov, or you have literally no idea. You know who else had no idea? Yaakov had no idea. You know who else had no idea? Esav had no idea. I mean, you just don't know. Like, he literally, coming with 400 soldiers, the odds are he was coming to kill him. It was war. And that could have been his intention when he left. It was war. But then as he came and he got all these presents and Yaakov bowed down, he was such a servant and so servile. So in a second, Esav changed his mind and he hugged him. And Chazal highlight this ambiguity or this by talking about that he kissed him, but he bit him and he broke his teeth because Esav was biting him, was kissing him. It was all happening at the same time. And when Esav said afterwards, listen, I'll travel with you. Yaakov's like, no, I don't want to travel with you. Right? Why didn't Yaakov want to travel with him? Because the next day, Esav could have turned around and killed him. Like you wouldn't know. He's rash, it's here and now, he's very emotional. Not really so trustworthy with that. Okay, so Esav really wasn't the guy, the leader. Like you need somebody who's more thoughtful and more and more matun and could control himself a little more and plan for the future. Okay, but Esav is a complicated, he's not, in the pshat of the Torah, he doesn't come out as an evil, wicked, 100% Darth Vader-ish. I guess Darth Vader turns out okay. The Emperor is totally bad. He doesn't come out as the Emperor, right? He comes out, listen, he loves his father. He tries to please his father all the time. I mean, mamish all the time. He gets suckered by his brother all the time. Yaakov was grabbing at his heel from the day he was born to the day that he died. He was grabbing at it all the time. He gets tricked by Yaakov. Okay? He was done. He doesn't develop as a character. He was born done. Yaakov develops. That's the whole point of Yaakov. It becomes Ish Emet, and Yaakov goes through a whole development. Esav doesn't develop. He's Esav right when he comes out. You know, he's a leader of men. He loves the field. He really pleases his father, wants to imitate his father. Very rash, you know, very of this moment. That's Esav. Okay. Now, there's another figure in the Torah that is in the Bereishis that is parallel to Esav. And if you understand this, you can actually understand the Sefer Bereishis. There's another person in Bereishis that is parallel to Esav. This is such a chap. I don't know if we want to get this, let this out yet. There's a person in Bereishis who's parallel to Esav. Who's parallel to Esav? Yes.
Rachel.
Say again?
Rachel. Rachel Aminu.
Wow. How is Rachel parallel to Esav?
She wants to be like the chosen one, but Leah is constantly like trying to get what she has, and like she's, yeah, and like essentially like Hashem in many ways chose Leah. Leah's the one who has more of the children. Like Leah was the oldest one, she was the natural Bechora.
So that, I'm sorry that you're breaking up. That was so fascinating. That is fascinating. I never thought of that before. And there are parallels between Rachel and Esav. I have to think about that. We'll maybe plug that in after. Who else is parallel? Who can you say else is parallel to Esav and Bereishis?
Nimrod.
Say again?
Nimrod.
That's what we would normally think, right? Nimrod is the first person that comes to mind because we think of Esav as this warrior killer beast. And Nimrod is this warrior killer beast. So that's like
a lady.
That's like a theme that could. Cain, I see Cain over here. Why Cain? That's interesting. Why Cain? There is parallels with Cain as the farmer. So keep that in mind. Lot.
Yosef.
Who said Yosef? Who said Yosef?
Hi.
Why did you say Yosef?
My father's in the background listening also, and he kept saying, say Yosef, say Yosef.
It is Yosef. Yosef is Esav. Now, I don't think this, or I'm not alone to think this, but I'll tell you who definitely thought this. The brothers thought that. Yosef was always different. What was the profession of the brothers? What were they?
Shepherds.
They were shepherds. What was Yosef?
Second to his father.
What if, was there a profession that he was? I like second to his father. But was there a profession that he was? Is he a shepherd? Talia says he was a farmer. How do you know he was a farmer? It's a good guess, based on the theme. So Yosef has a
Maybe when he was in Mitzrayim and he like took over the grain, that shows the knowledge of it.
Who just said that? Who just said that?
Me.
What was me?
Shoshana Shire.
Shoshana. So Yosef wasn't just a farmer, he was the farmer. Yosef garnered the wheat of the whole country. Now, you know that he was different than his brothers, because when he had his dream that he was going to rule over his brothers, what was his dream? What was the dream that showed he was going to rule over his brothers?
The 12 stalks of wheat bowed. Well, the 11 bowed to his.
Can you imagine the brothers dreaming of wheat bowing to their sheaves of wheat? The brothers didn't, what's wheat? They were shepherds. Yosef dreamed a farmer's dream. Yosef was a man of the field. Now this really clinches it, I have to tell you. It's so startling when that's so startling. At the end of Yaakov, Yaakov dies. Now, Yaakov dies in Mitzrayim. Yosef has been supporting his brothers for how many years has he been supporting his brothers? Like 20 years? They came down to Egypt. They hugged. He said, you thought badly. Hashem brought me here. He supported them. He supported the family. Probably something like 20 years. Yaakov dies. What were the brothers' reaction? What did his brothers say when Yaakov dies?
The brothers thought that he was just waiting until this moment to kill them or to get rid of them, just to appease Yaakov.
Okay,
they told him that before he died, he made them promise that they wouldn't kill him.
Yeah. So look at the psukim. So at the end of source 20, Vayurachei Yosef Kimesa Vim, that the brothers saw that. Yeah, their father died. Vayomru, and they said, Lu yistamenu Yosef. Lest Yosef is bearing a grudge. Ve'yishiv yashiv lanu et kol rasha gamanu oto. And he's waiting to give back to us all the evil that we did to them. And then they came to Yosef and they said that your father told you to forgive you, to forgive us. Now let me ask you a question. Why do you think the brothers thought that Yosef was bearing a grudge? He fed them for 20 years. 20 years. Why do you think they were bearing a grudge?
That he was holding out to punish them while Yaakov was alive.
But why would they think that? Why would they think that this whole life, 20 years, he's been waiting for Yaakov to die and for them to, and then to punish the brothers for what he did? Lu yistamenu Yosef. Lest Yosef is bearing grudge. Why would he think that?
Because that's what Esav did with Yaakov.
That's what Esav did. Look at source 17. Pasuk Mem Aleph. Vayistom, it's the same word. Vayistom Esav et Yaakov ala bracha asher barchu aviv. And Esav bore a grudge. Lu yistamenu Yosef. Esav bore a grudge that Yaakov took the bracha from him. Leomer Esav bilibo, and Esav said in his heart, Yikrvu yimei ebel avi, varga et Yaakov achi. I will wait for my father to die, then I will kill my brother Yaakov. Why did they think that Yosef was going to bear a grudge and take revenge for them after Yaakov died? Is because they always thought that Yosef was Esav. Until Yaakov died, throughout their lives, they thought that Yosef was Esav. And that's why they had to get rid of him. Because he was Esav.
Doesn't he have a...
He was Esav. Oh. Let me just say that Yosef bore a lot of characteristics of Esau. He had the farmer, the man of the field. He was a leader of men. Yosef was very emotional. If you go throughout Bereishis, the two people in Bereishis who cry the most are Yosef and Esau. They're very emotional. And they thought he was Esau. And they suspected him all throughout their lives. It was only at the very end, Be'yinachem Alibo, that they were comforted in their hearts. That Yosef proved himself different. Because Yosef was like Esav, but he wasn't Esav. All throughout the Bereishis, there's a fight between the shepherd and the farmer. You know, the shepherd is the more matun and... the visionary and that kind of leader, and the farmer, Yisadeh, could be a hunter, could be rash. Yosef was able to combine two different things. Meaning Yosef was able to lehit apek, he was able to control himself when he got emotional. And Yosef was able to think in the big picture. Like his brothers came and he recognized them, but he didn't just reveal himself to them. He said, okay, I'll wait. Let's see what happens with the dreams. Yosef was thinking much in much longer terms than the here and now. right? Yosef bringing Binyamin down, the whole, everything that he did, he's much more thinking about the future. It's just his whole plan of 7 years of plenty and 7 years of famine. Everything is the future for him. He's the opposite of Esav in that sense. He doesn't have that problem of I'm going to die. In fact, you see that because what is the last thing that he says to the brothers to do? That when he dies, they're going to, years later, leave Egypt. They should take his body with them. But you see, he's concerned way after he dies. And the brothers missed that. They missed that he wasn't Esau. He had some characteristics of Esau, but he wasn't Esau. In fact, one can say that he was the combination that Yitzchak was looking for. When Yitzchak said, Hakol kol Yaakov, v'hayadayim yidei Esau. And the ideal person is one who has the abilities and strengths. Who's a man of the field and a man of the world. Or a woman of the field or a woman of the world. With the ability to succeed. And to succeed greatly. But not just in the physical. But also in the spiritual. Not just focused on attaining wealth and mass for the moment. But to think about the future and destiny and the covenant. Yosef was the tikkun of Esau. He was Esau with Yaakov. Ela toldos Yaakov Yosef. Yosef was the son of Yaakov with the capabilities of Esau. And that's why Chazal always understood that there's an antidote to Esau in the world. What is the antidote to Esav? It's Yosef. Yosef stood in front of Rachel to protect Rachel from Esav. Esav can beat anyone, but he can't beat Yosef. Because Yosef has his kochot, but he has Yaakov's vision. So in the end of days, in Sefer Ovadia, it tells us that Yaakov is a fire. Yosef is the flame, and Esav is the straw that will burn by Yosef. Nothing, Esav cannot stop Yosef, because he has Esav's strengths and then some. That's voracious. That's the story. There's a lot of other layers to it. I was just speaking to Julie that maybe next year we should do a whole voracious series to unpack the Avot. Because the story of Bereishis is an unfolding story with layer upon layer of character development and personal evolution. And by studying and understanding the Avot and Imahot in this way, you know, we gain great insight into our own lives. You know, for us at Yeshiva University, the idea that we're training and educating the leaders in the world of tomorrow, you know, Jacob mentioned before how so many people are working day and night, you know, on the reopening and the figuring out and all the decisions that's made. There's only one reason that we're doing it. It's because we believe in you. You are the leaders in the world of tomorrow. You who internalize our values and who are studying and have the capabilities to succeed enormously, to be a person of incredible impact in all spheres of whatever you choose, your family, your community, the Jewish people, society at large. Your choice. Wherever you decide to use your incredible kochot, that you will be the leaders in the world of tomorrow. I believe in you. That's why we're here at Yeshiva University. You know, and that's the gift, you know, of for us is just and so encouraged and confident in our future. This is a crazy time of coronavirus. It is insane, unprecedented, not over, long way to go. Long way to go. It's going to be all about resilience and values, because we have a long way to go. You know, and seeing you and knowing you, you know, gives us the confidence in the future. So I am thrilled when Jacob invited me here. I'd be here all the time. This is my preferred place to be in Yeshiva University. You should see all the other things I have to be. This is by far, okay, the preferred place to be. And thank you so much to be here and to have a chance to study together with you. And I look forward to many occasions in the future. Thank you so much. Have a great, great night.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.